버블.
Hello and welcome to Burst of Bubble live on ChemFM. I'm Michael Quintario.
And I'm Chris Moten.
And we're here to bring you just under an hour of silly comments about frivolous news stories that we've picked up over the course of the week.
Yes, it's the news quiz for people who don't like to think quite as much.
Yeah, and yeah, it's actually been quite hard this week finding stories. The news has been dominated by Egypt, which is very important and very worthy. But
minimally funny.
But minimally funny. But we're about the funny here. And so we decided to start off this week with robots, which have been in the news in a few different places.
And importantly, not conquering Egypt.
Yes. Although we might later start worrying about them taking over the planet a la Terminator.
So this story, our first robot-related story, is all about a robot which has been sent to a school in Texas in place of a student who can't come in. Not just because he's lazy or, you know, tied up or something. He's immunocompromised or something like that. That requiring that he remain in his house or possibly in a plastic bubble or something like that. And so he has this robot which can move around the school on his behalf and basically be his presence in a Texas schoolroom.
I think this is a really nice heartwarming story because they actually managed to get it so that, okay, it'll be a bit weird just kind of interacting with it. Does it play games? Does it come out does it go into the playground at the end during break time and play tick?
Oh, right, yeah. I thought you meant more like if somebody was bored of talking to him, you know, it's probably implemented on top of, it's probably just an Android on a stick or something like, sorry, that sounds stupid. This robot is just an Android. This Android is a mere cyborg. No, what I mean is it could be an Android phone on a stick. Would pretty much get what you want, at which point you would be able to close the video conferencing application and play Angry Birds. So that it'd be quite a social faux pas to disable somebody's telepresence robot and use it to play frivolous web games. But can it play TIG? That's a good question indeed. It can certainly roll around.
Yeah, it's obviously not going to be able to cope with any games particularly more complicated than that. Anything
you
that
can't play football.
It can't. I don't know. Have you seen there's actually a robot football competition where they actually program little robots to just bash into the ball, and the whole point about it is that not their ball control skills particularly, but their teamwork and stuff, and programming those.
Yeah, I've actually seen them. Yeah, the ones that are just wheeled robots that can push a football around. Yeah, they seem to be pretty cool.
I'm waiting until they take on the England team. I'd love to see that match. Because, yeah, I mean, there's an obvious joke we can make here, and I'm going to stoop low enough to make it, in that I'm sure at some point the England team will be so bad and the robots will be so good, it will be really one-sided. Because that's what the England team's like. They fail.
Just to emphasise the point. The English cricket team, meanwhile, is immune from such jokes for, about 6 months.
Yeah, no, it's interesting, cricket, because we won the main bit, we won the Ashes, and then since then have kind of not played so well. We've been losing all the quick knockout, basically the quick knockabout games to the Ashes.
Oh, yeah, the one-day series. Yeah, that's been going really badly.
Yeah, to be fair, it's kind of like the, in a way, it's kind of like the quick school playground version of the Ashes.
Quick school playground in the sense that it takes about 8 hours, but it's certainly quicker than a test match, that's for sure.
Yeah. So getting back to the news story that we actually started this from, it's apparently this robot is 4 feet tall, self-balancing, and just has a basic video conferencing system on it. So it cost about $5,000. So why haven't we just got effectively a Roomba with a stick and a phone on the top?
That would actually do the trick. And it doesn't sound like it can do anything more. Cause I was hoping this thing would be, you know, you'd be able to have it do things pick up objects and so on. So, you know, if some teacher said, you know, I want you to take this down the hall for me, then you could, and, you know, that sort of stuff. I don't know if that ever happens. I've never been asked by a teacher to carry things around the school. I'm a pupil, not a messenger, damn it. But, yeah, I don't know. It doesn't seem to have great powers beyond the Android on the stick.
It's very limited interacting. It allows him to interact with the surroundings. It's like your interaction is limited to bumping into it.
It could get somebody. It could be good for getting somebody's attention.
Yeah.
And it's also quite good because you can override sort of social norms that apply to normal people. So, like, you know, normally if you wanted to get somebody's attention, repeatedly walking into their legs would not be an acceptable thing to do. So you can actually have a bit of fun there.
Oh, yeah. I think we should just applaud the fact that this technology is being used to give all this extra freedom to this kid and, importantly, force a kid to go to school.
It'd be quite useful, actually, because it's video conferencing software. What you can sometimes do with these things is you can play videos. So there's an obvious opportunity for the kid to record a video of himself, like a 10-second loop of him going, that's interesting. Uh-huh.
I think that would be quite obvious if someone was just going, that's interesting, uh-huh, that's interesting, uh-huh, throughout an entire lesson.
Yeah, I mean, you know, obviously, you want to be a little bit more cunning than that, but
either that or just stuttering whenever they play it, going from live feed into this clip.
Yeah, right, exactly. And it'd also help you because you could, like, if he needs to make a big speech or something, you can record it. So this is like, I mean, you know, we've all at some point been 16 years old. How old is he actually? He's out of high school, so he's going to be something like that.
Yeah, it looks.
He doesn't actually say. But we've all been 16 years old and sort of stammeringly asked a girl out, and then this is going to actually be quite helpful for that because he can have like a dozen takes at that, and then just get the robot to play back the best one.
Oh, not just helping with schooling, but also helping with life.
Right. I mean, you know, it might get a bit awkward if he were to, you know, like hit the wrong video at the wrong time. You know, he ends up sat in the third row of geography saying, Lucinda, I felt this way for years. You got to keep tabs on that.
Yeah. So that one's a nice story of a robot being used to help humanity, and next we're going on to more direct competition with humanity.
Yes, it's harming humanity, but in a very limited way, in that it's stopping them from winning the game show Jeopardy. This is a robot invented by IBM whose purpose is basically to be posed Jeopardy questions, like live on the show, not input by any extravagant means, and then win the game against some past human contestants.
Yeah, the past human contestants who are like the best human contestant. So it's not just like find some game shows where you start screaming at the screen of the idiots that they've got on there. You're like, how can you not know the answer? These will all actually be people you go, who, if when you're watching the show, you'll go, crikey, how did they know that? And then you'll be a robot. There'll be a robot there, which will be even more so. Crikey, how did that collection of semiconductors know that?
Right, well, the answer is, of course, because it has the entirety of Google shoved into it in some fashion or another. This is like, you know, if you gave one of the contestants an iPhone and then you see who wins, I mean, it wouldn't be any major surprise. So it seems like an oddity of a competition.
The key thing here is that they're using it as a test of how AI can cope with non-straightforward questioning, basically.
Yes, indeed, because at Jeopardy, you ask, it's posed in that weird fashion that you say, here's the answer, now I want you to tell me the question. So the answer will be something like, the George the Fourth Bridge. And the question will be, you know, like, what bridge connects the big rock in the middle of Edinburgh to the rest of Edinburgh? You know, I mean, that's fairly obvious. There's not many other things the George the Fourth Bridge is. But they're going to pick answers with many questions that could lead to them, and it's going to need to find the most likely question that's going to lead to that thing. So, you know, it's backwards Google. That's slightly more challenging.
I like the fact that the Jeopardy host obviously was in a press conference talking about this, and people were going, oh, but in all these movies, whenever there's an intelligent computer, it just tries to take over the world. And so he replied, that's science fiction. But then in an ironic fashion, he went up to say, IBM sees Watson more like the computer in Star Trek, which he seems to have failed to have noticed is also science fiction, and is unclear as to why he should be able to pick and choose his science fiction to get the outcome which means the best for humanity.
But yeah, it's older science fiction. It's 60s era science fiction when people were, like, you know, wearing moon boots and stuff.
But there's people. I kind of want to get this straight, that before Star Trek, people were still writing science fiction about the world being destroyed. It wasn't just when Hollywood caught up with the technology that we finally got the films. People didn't just go, wow, we can now make killer cyborg robots that look a little bit like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Now we should make films about killer robots that look like Arnold Schwarzenegger. It's not how...
The technology wasn't the limiting factor there. It was the invention of Schwarzenegger. It's like when the first Schwarzenegger rolled off the production line, they thought, whoa, yeah, I can see what we can do with this. And then Fedosa 2 said to Producer 1, then maybe afterwards he can govern California. And Producer 1 said, don't be an idiot. He's the stupidest man ever created. That's some fighting political satire for you here on First the Bubble.
I love this. It's got 15 terabytes of RAM. And then
that is a lot of RAM. You're going to have to elaborate on your love for that a little bit more, because at the moment that is just a large number.
It's just the fact that it's such a large number now. But then again, it's not that long ago that 4 gigabytes was a large number. So I'm just imagining people just playing Jeopardy in their homes against little, more miniaturized versions of this robot in the future. Perhaps you can get those board games, like you get the Family Fortunes one, which comes with a book thing that goes eh, and all that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
In the future, we'd be able to get board games for TV shows that come with a little computer like this.
So, what do you win for Jeopardy? Because, I mean, we've got to bear in mind that as much as we're like, ooh, this could be the harbinger of taking over the world by robots, this might be taking over the world by robots, depending on what you get for winning Jeopardy.
You get cash.
Cash, okay, yeah, so there you go.
The two people it's playing against, one combined $6.3 million through being on the show. So it's actually quite a bit of money.
Okay, yeah. And for $6.3 million, you could, like, arm a robot militia.
Yeah, I'm not convinced they'll give the money to the robot, and they probably also this is getting up to this amount over several shows. They didn't get it. They didn't just go, congratulations, you win one show, have $3 million.
Oh yeah, but obviously they're not gonna, you know, they're not planning to write a check to, you know, pay to the order of a robot $6.3 million.
It's Watson.
Watson.
I assume because it finds all the things elementary, but really that should be Holmes. So I think they've shot themselves in the foot a little bit there.
Right, well, leave some room for future development.
The next one called Holmes.
I mean, Hal has got to be the end point of that.
Hal?
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. So that's nice. And one more slightly related to robot in that involved something to do with computers. It's very tenuous.
It might have been orchestrated by a robot.
Is it... Google has accused Bing of copying its search results. I like the fact that the headlines writers have just decided that Google and Bing are like physical entities that can accuse and be accused rather than...
Well, you know, and a representative of the company. Yeah, I mean, obviously it's cooler if you imagine that Google is some enormous mecha cyborg that, like, staggers over California.
Okay, goes up. You've been nicking my search results.
Bing will be in Seattle, won't it? So there'll be like robotic war on the Western Seaboard.
that sounds like it is going to be a film. Just represent this.
I'd say they'd struggle to make that into a compelling film in which somebody nicks somebody's search engine results. But The Social Network worked, so. And yeah, this one would have dueling robots. I'd go and watch that film.
And Microsoft denies copying Google and also accuses Google of conducting spy novel-esque stunts.
We should explain what actually happened here.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So basically what occurred here is Google planted results in their search database, mapping nonsense words onto some particular result that has nothing to do with them. So the particular example that's pictured features Google talking about and linking that to some theatre in Los Angeles.
And it's not actually just a Klingon term. They've not just started Google Klingon. Does Google have Klingon? It wouldn't surprise me if Google had Klingon.
Google does have Klingon.
Google, oh dear. It's already been done.
I feel a little bit worse about humanity.
Hurry up the Jeopardy robot apocalypse.
But what happened here is Google mapped the nonsense word onto this theatre in Los Angeles, and they found that shortly afterwards it showed up in Bing's search results for the same nonsense term. And basically the only way that can be there is if any time somebody uses Internet Explorer to perform that Google search for that load of nonsense, that it gets transmitted to Microsoft. So Google had some of their minions sit there for a lunchtime just repeatedly searching for this term in Internet Explorer and clicking on the result. And hey presto, it showed up in Bing. So there's an obvious opportunity here for Google to, like, sabotage Bing by having lots of people search Google for Bing and then, you know, then click on the 72nd result that's, you know, like, the state legislature of New Jersey or something.
Why is the state legislature of New Jersey called Bing?
It's just a bystander. It's probably a case. It was Bing versus Steve.
surely there's a more famous Bings.
Oh, he's Googling Bing now. The answer is, the top three are all actually Bing, as is the fourth one.
I'm disappointed.
There's quite a lot of genuine Bing here.
I'm disappointed because I thought Bing Crosby would come up.
Ah, that's true. Yeah, that would be okay.
That was a Bing that I was expected. I'm slightly saddened by that. Like, what's to stop the search engines from just deciding to call something Michael or Chris or Burst of Bubble, and then...
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously they can. Our existing huge outreach would be severely curtailed.
And then no one would ever be able to find anything about us?
It would be a tragedy.
Yeah, obviously that's quite low down on list, and people who are looking for Bing Crosby are probably going to know who he actually is and not get confused when they search for Bing.
I didn't think he was capable of searching the internet, but I guess this must be him.
I mean, yeah, like White Christmas, internet search.
Almost the same.
Two very well connected fields of endeavour. and of course, Bing have replied saying that they're not just stealing Google's results.
Yep.
So
that's that.
Yeah, that's about that. If you've got any comments about any of the stories that you've heard so far on today's show, you can email them into us, studio@camfm.co.uk, or you can go onto the website, www.camfm.co.uk, and look at the form there and use a web form.
We'll be back after this musical break with more silly news.
On air and online.
For students across Cambridge.
Your station.
Your Cam FM.
Hello, welcome back to Burst of All with Mike Ontario and Chris Moten.
Hello.
Hello. We're going on to an international section now, looking at silly international news, and we're starting all the way over in Malawi.
That's right. Malawi has passed possibly the most ridiculous law in all of creation, which is going some. Because there are some actually oppressive laws out there. This law is oppressive, but in a silly way, and therefore we're free to talk about it. Malawi has apparently passed a law saying that you must not break wind in public. That's right, we're stooping to the fart jokes.
The bill apparently reads, any person who vitiates the atmosphere in any place so as to make it noxious to the public, to the health of the persons in general dwelling, or carry on business in the neighbourhood, or passing along the public way, shall be guilty of a misdemeanour.
So did you say that they eviscerated the atmosphere?
Who vitiates.
Vitiates? That's a new one on me.
Yeah, I don't know, yeah. But the problem here is that two of the senior judicial officials are arguing... I'll try saying that in class. Judicial officials... Two of the most senior judicial officials have been arguing over whether or not this is, in fact, banning flatulence in public or not.
Mm. Yep, it sounds like it was basically meant to say that you can't set up your, like, pig iron smelter, upwind of the shanty towns that may or may not exist.
Justice Minister George Chaponda has said that it's promoting public decency and just go to the toilet when you feel like farting. I wonder what the word is in Malawi, actually.
Sorry?
I wonder what the actual word is, because they've obviously used farting. Do they have, like, a similar colloquialism for it? Because we could just say,
I see, yes.
Passing wind.
It's probably one of those, yeah, it's probably one of those first things that human cultures develop. There's, like, it'll be one of the stages of development from ape to man. We'll be inventing a naughty term for breaking wind.
Not really naughty, is it?
Well, no,
we could. Do you know what we could do? We could just use Whizpop for it, like in a BFG. just go to the toilet when you feel like whizpopping. He told local radio.
Oh dear. Just be careful. You front that with the BFG reference. So it seems like. Basically, we've got here. Well, we've got two things. Number one, it's clear that the what's the adjective? Malawian?
Malawian?
Whatever it is. The Malawi derived legislature clearly is sort of, their priority list is clearly a little bit interesting. You know, they're sat there sort of going, well, there's quite a lot of murders, you know, quite a lot of, like, you know, theft, property damage, grievous bodily harm. I know. Let's stop people from breaking wind in the street.
Yeah, but the thing is, you could say the same about this country, really. Because people are going, oh yeah, people get killed, people get horribly injured, but we still have parking meters.
True. Although they're not really, like, you know, top priority. I challenge you to find a police force in the UK where murder is rife. But they say, but our top priority, double yellow lines.
But they're not saying this is their top priority either.
Well, no, I suppose, actually, yeah, okay. It's the West media that has leapt on this and gone, look at those African fools. Assuming for a moment that Malawi is in Africa. I think it is, but I'm not actually totally sure of that.
So, yeah, I feel you should point out that is just your assumption of how the media has gone with this story rather than your feeling.
Isn't it? Oh, yeah, yeah. that was me having a go at them, possibly in an unjustified way. Follow that one if you like. I'll post a Venn diagram on the blog afterwards. okay, so I think what we got here is we got a law of convenience. This is like, imagine if you got somebody up for a murder trial, but you think it's probably not going to stick. Then you're almost certainly going to be able to get them for farting on their way out. You're almost certain to be able to find some sort of witness who's willing to say that, I don't know whether or not he stabbed him, but he certainly broke wind afterwards. Which you would, wouldn't you? You know, it's the visceral horror of having taken a life. Seems like, to be honest, one of the better consequences that might follow immediately. Oh. So it's the Malawi police will be sure of winning every case by one means or another.
I'm not sure how long you'll get put away for whiz popping, though.
This is obviously aggravated whiz popping, aggravated by murder in this case.
Oh God, would that start? Oh, imagine if that started getting used as a terminology. Just no, let's not go there. But we have got other stories from around the world. We'd like to think of ourselves as being international.
Don't leave.
Here.
We have other higher brow stories.
what one is that in Germany, Leaken has won the award of Anglicism of the Year, which has set off debate among linguists who don't like the fact that they keep on using English words in German because they chillen, surfing the internet. Obviously not surfing the internet. But surfing is the word that they use there.
Ich surfe, du surfst, er surft, etc.
Gesurft. What you did in the past.
In the past, yeah. Yeah, yeah. This is basically the German language, like every other language on the planet, borrows a whole lot of words for things it needs to be able to express, and it can't do very well right now. And in this particular case, they've pinched leak, in particular relevance to WikiLeaks and so on, which makes a lot of sense. It turns out there was a word already, but it was about 8 syllables. So they pinched leak. Yes. Had geleaked, etc.
Other contenders to go in win this Anglicism of the Year were Entfunden, which is basically their translation of to unfriend.
Oh dear. They also actually have Lichen, which is another, like, not as in things you find on rocks, but as in what you do on Facebook.
Also not comparing two things that are similar either.
Oh yeah, indeed. Yes.
Likened to
that's also a word.
Yeah, a bit archaic. Isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. No, but the context would be like, you know, ich habe das Brandenburg Gate geliked, which would mean that you'd liked the Brandenburg Gate for some reason on Facebook, as you do.
I don't know.
Show probably, of patriotism.
It probably has a page.
It probably does. Yes, it'd be an odd situation to be a diehard fan of the Brandenburg Gate.
What would you do? I mean, it doesn't exactly tour or anything.
Not that we know of. When nobody's looking at the Brandenburg Gate, it's possible it wanders about. Occasional sighting in Paris.
But there's kind of a bit of a fight going on, because There's a joy. This is a new prize, Anglicanism of the Year. It's not been around before. But there's also a society called... Oh, what's it called? There's a Society for the German Language, which I'm not going to... I am going to. Die Gesellschaft für Deutsche Sprache. Is that right?
It might or might not be. I don't want to try and best that. It's essentially l'Académie Française for German.
Yeah.
For proper irony, it should be called l'Académie Allemande, but no.
It's a group founded in 1947 to protect German from the invasion of foreign words. That's a very unfortunate way of putting it, I feel.
As German nationalist insanity goes, this is some of the better stuff we've seen in the recent past. You know, this is a move in the right direction.
Well, they declared WikiLeaks to be one of its unwords of the year, which to me, I'm hoping unword isn't the actual thing word that they use, because that sounds a bit Big Brother to me. So you are now an unperson when you're being wiped from the record by Big Brother. You've now got unwords.
So I actually quite like some of these words, you know. I quite like that they tend to mean something which is not quite what they borrowed. So so lichen is a good example. I imagine lichen doesn't, because there is a perfectly accessible German word for to like, and it's mögen. So presumably ich habe das Brandenburg Gate gemerkt. Probably it might be irregular actually, but anyway, that would be a sentence meaning I actually genuinely liked the Brandenburg Gate in the past. I fell out with it in more recent times. But using geliked instead would imply that you liked it on Facebook, which means that you may or may not actually like it personally, but wanted your friends to think you liked it.
That's quite nice actually, because this is one of the things that's annoying about social networking media, is how we've started overloading words. So now we have so-and-so is my friend, and you're like, do you mean actual friend?
Or have you met them once, and now they're on Facebook, and you've honestly no idea who they are?
Yeah. But there are some great ones, though. Sometimes they don't take the direct English word. So apparently, for a mobile phone in German is known as Ein Handy, and a video projector is Ein Beamer, according to The Guardian.
Indeed so, yes. Beamer sounds quite cool. I like the term beamer.
It sounds futuristic, doesn't it?
Handy is a bit nonspecific. I mean, you know, what are you going to do when something else turns out to be useful?
Something else turns out to be used in your hand.
Like a trowel. Yes. Ein Spaten handy.
And then, so yeah, basically we've got... Now we've got a fight between linguists.
Not a fight I'd watch, but, you know, I'm sure it's on Sky Sports 76.
There you go. Talking about taking things from other countries, China's state broadcaster apparently used footage from the US film Top Gun while they were talking about their own air force.
I like this one. Yes, there was a news article. So I should say I like this one less. Like I don't, and I want to die.
Do you like this one?
Oh yeah, and I have this film from Top Gun geliked. I think I just made Top Gun an aristocrat there. That's film von Top Gun. That's like, you know, as in von is the German aristocratic prefix. If you're the Duke of Wessex, then the equivalent would be the Duke on von Wessex. Anyway,
getting back to the Top Gun story.
Murdering the German language, and move back onto Top Gun. Yes. So basically, what happened here is the Chinese national broadcaster was doing a news story about military exercises and described how they'd been doing a live fire air force exercise, and they destroyed all of their targets, and wasn't it awesome? And China shall rise again, which is all well and good. You know, that's what the national news is there for. But instead of using actual footage of the event, they use some clips from Top Gun, not ones where there's, you know, it's like, and look, Tom Hanks is in the Chinese military. they used action shots, dogfights and things being blown up and so on, which obviously everybody noticed that that's clearly a Hollywood explosion, and Hollywood flying and so on. It's intriguing. I mean, presumably that indicates the actual exercise went really horribly. That if they'd actually had footage of that, that would have been all full of planes flying into each other and people jumping out, parachuting to the ground and going, oh, sorry.
It might just be really shaky, like poorly filmed home video footage,
and yeah, they go, true, yeah.
there's okay. The camera's wobbling. Now it's looking at the floor. Now it's wobbling a bit more. And there's some sort of dot in the sky.
Yep. And now I think it's on fire. But that might be ours or theirs. So let's just fuck Top Gun in here.
Did you not think? Perhaps just no one in China knows it's Top Gun.
True. Yeah. Possible. I don't know if it was popular there. So what?
It's like not really.
Maybe. Yeah. I don't know. What could you do with it? Like, is it the case that the news is essentially dictated by what's in the Chinese national broadcaster's DVD library? So, like, you know, the next film they've got is The Shawshank Redemption. So come hell or high water, we will have have some sort of news story, pertaining to corrupt prison officials.
What happens when they get something like The Matrix? And this is a computing industry, and they just have the green symbols.
Yeah, indeed. The King's Speech. Mysteriously, the Chinese president has turned into King George VI for the purposes of this clip, but otherwise it's accurate.
We generated, like, Doctor Who into Colin Firth. There you go. There's that. And moving just a little hop away from China onto Japan, Stephen Fry isn't going to be going there anymore because he's offended them.
He dropped the A-bomb.
Joke. So yeah, he's the interesting thing about this is it was on QI and they just talked about Mr. Yamaguchi, who was burnt in a Hiroshima explosion. He travelled the train by Nagasaki and was caught in the second attack 3 days yet? The second atomic bomb attack in 3 days later?
Yep, this is a curious one. I mean, so the QI thing in question was basically, yeah, Stephen Fry says this guy got nuked in Hiroshima, took the train to Nagasaki, got nuked again. That is surely the most unlucky you can possibly be in all of the world. Seems fair. That is pretty bad luck.
Or alternatively, it was one of the luckiest people because he survived both of them, and he actually died last month, age 93. So it didn't actually seem to do him too much harm.
That's true, yes. Actually, Hiroshima would have been pretty bad luck.
Yeah, yeah, as opposed to all the 180,000 people who died during bombings and people since.
Right, indeed, yeah.
So the point here is that obviously they just hit a touchy subject and people have got offended rather than the actual clip necessarily being insulting to anyone. They just didn't like that. The atomic bomb was mentioned, basically.
Yes, yeah, so there was basically... I suppose the equivalent story would be something like, you know, the German embassy would certainly complain if you were sat there going, you know, oh, and then he went to Dachau and he survived that, you know, and then he went to Kolditz and he survived that. And then you could see people being a bit, I'm not quite liking where they're going with this one.
Yeah, it's an interesting one, and something we're actually here on Tenterhooks actually trying to make sure that we don't say anything offensive.
I'm working on it.
Yeah, but I don't think necessarily mentioning that someone was lucky to have survived the atomic bomb attacks really is insulting the people who didn't survive them.
If anything, it's essentially a tribute to the man's sort of constitution, that he successfully took two nuclear blasts and walked away from them both and lived another 50 years. Good work.
we'd like to have a quick commemorating sounds like the wrong word, just a moment of remembrance for the atomic bomb victims to show our respects. Okay, there we go. There's just a little bit of peace into our lightly entertaining show.
The minimum quantum of respect.
So if you've got any emails about anything that we've been talking about, you can email us, studio@camfm.co.uk, or go online to www.camfm.co.uk and click on the web form. And we'll be back with some more silly news after this.
On air, online, and across Cambridge.
Your station,
your Cam FM.
Hello, and welcome back to Burst the Bubble, your frivolous news show.
Your source of stuff. Like, your source of words. Loosely constructed to sentences. Relating loosely to news.
Here on Chem FM.
That song was The Incomparable Mr. Flannery by Clutch. And earlier in the show, we had Tokyo Vampires and Wolves by Wombats.
The Wombats.
Possibly by The Wombats, yes. Our system has it as Wombats.
It has a vendetta against the word the. Although I assume that's so that you don't get all of the bands starting with the coming on the T. Well, going back to what this show is actually supposed to be about, we have got a couple more news stories, and then before we have a quick roundup. Actually, this is probably the closest we're going to get to our quick roundup of an anthology of marginal interest today. These are all the stories that we didn't feel were quite as interesting as previous ones.
You got to stop introducing that segment this way.
I know. So,
and now the nadir of the show.
Okay, the ones that we felt we couldn't go as quite in-depth to. How does that sound?
That's probably right. Like we couldn't with the atomic bomb, but for different reasons.
Yeah, slightly less in-depth section of the show.
Anyway, let's start off with the first of these stories, in which the Council of, if you'd click on the appropriate tab again, a council named to come, has ordered its staff to clock off whilst they're chatting to other employees.
Oh, sorry about that.
The council
confused about what we were doing next. So yes, the Carlisle City Council.
Carlisle City Council, there we go.
The team leaders in the benefits section have sent an email saying that smokers are required to clock out when they want a cigarette, so why don't you clock out when you have a 10-minute chat about the weather?
See, on the face of it, this is reasonable, in the sense of sort of when, you know, are we paying you to work, are we paying you to chat? But obviously nobody has noticed that as soon as you say anything like this, you get national media coverage from the Daily Star, in which they go, easy anger, we're going to have a story where we grumble about the man and how the man is oppressing us. Which in this case he is. So yeah, it's hard to argue.
Yeah, it's kind of a bit though. The problem is, it means that if you go and put some stuff into photocopy and start talking what to someone else who's in the queue for the photocopier, well, obviously you've got. Obviously, the problem there is that your workplace haven't managed to sort out a much better system for dealing with multiple photocopiers.
Oh, well, that one's easy, right? But you do critical path analysis on your activities for the day, and any time that talking about little Jimmy's football game, what was in fact in the critical path. that's the bit where you clock off. In this case, the photocopier is the critical path, so you're free to kill time however you wish.
But that's not what they said. There's only a chat clock off.
Yeah. So, what else could they get you to clock off during?
How about they should get you to clock off in those bits where you just kind of zone out a little bit and...
Oh, yeah.
Like, you're going, oh, this. I'm thinking about
this. You realise you've been staring at your keyboard for 30 minutes, thinking about, why J? Why is there a letter J?
Is that
I
what
can't
you think?
See a good reason.
Is that what you think about?
It depends what my eyes are focused on whilst I'm zoned out. I might end up thinking about the Tilda character.
You just randomly decide one character to ponder about.
Well, I don't decide. It's very much involuntary loss of consciousness that happens when I'm doing something exceptionally boring.
But these are all valid parts of the working day. You can't just eliminate bits where you're finding something hard. Or...
I think thousands of Victorian workhouse administrators would disagree.
Okay, you can't just eliminate this without being a workhouse.
Indeed, yes. Essentially, this is Carlisle Council going, you know what would be great? A workhouse. They were great. Lots of work got done. Minimal worker happiness. Awesome. Which, for a lot of purposes, is really quite good, clearly quite useful. I mean, all your workers will quit. Go work for the next council over.
Just to start moving around Scotland, and imagine if people like start allocate putting those things in other places and just get chased around Scotland by by this directive.
The Conversation Brigade.
there you go.
Maybe people at call centres should have to clock off, like, you know, whilst they're breathing in. You're being paid to talk into a phone. It's impossible to simultaneously breathe in and talk into a phone. So get out of the pay system, damn it.
Is it? Hello!
If I phoned British Gas and somebody said, hello! I would conclude it had been possessed by zombies and switch my gas supplier post-haste.
Have you considered mining? Yeah, it doesn't work too.
If there's one thing I don't want, it's my fuel supplied by The Walking Dead. I draw the line at that.
It does sound a little bit like that, yeah. But there you go.
So moving on, the internet is coming to an end.
Yeah, we've run out of internet.
We have run out of internet. It is done. You've seen everything there is to see. Please go to your nearest form of mundane entertainment.
This isn't us just deciding that the internet's over. This is actually news, because the internet address and naming agency doles out blocks of internet addresses, mm-hmm. which you're basically not like the old www dot. Not that. That's not it. Basically, each device on the internet has four numbers between, what is it, 0 and 255.
Yes, indeed.
And basically, if you've not got one of these numbers, you're not on the internet. You're not on this list. You're not coming in.
Well, strictly speaking, there are ways to access the internet without one, like, for example, through a NAT system. But let's just assume for a moment that nobody knows what they are.
So what the problem is, when they started the internet, they thought that 4 billion numbers would be plenty. And we've basically run out of them now.
Yeah, at some point somebody went 4 billion people on 4 billion internet addresses, 6 billion humans. Can't see them all wanting it. Yeah, be fine. Which at the time seemed reasonable, actually, because it was a small network for joining universities together.
Yeah, this was 40 years ago rather than since broadband took off or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Then but Tony Blair said he wanted half of people to go to university, and immediately you're in trouble.
But
this is your fault, Blair. I was all right with Iraq, but not this.
But basically, the problem is now we've got these numbers. There is a system, a new system, with basically more numbers. Yep. It's got other improvements as well.
Two to the 128 of them, in fact.
Yeah, but more numbers is a key improvement.
Yep.
I like that. You're just like, oh, we run out of numbers. We want some more numbers.
Unfortunately, the system, the replacement system, which is called IP version 6, tech spotters.
Rather than IP version 4.
Which is what we have at the moment.
What happened to IP version 5?
It was an experimental system and just never deployed.
What, did they just like go, instead of numbers, we'll have sounds on the internet? I don't know. And everything will be delivered by pigeon.
And then the AI and the IANA and the IETF, the Internet Engineering Task Force, fired those idiots and developed IP version 6, pigeon free, and with 2 to the 128 addresses. So basically, this is the solution. But for the past decade or so, the protocol has been defined, but telecom suppliers have generally speaking not been asked to implement it.
Bury the head in sand.
There's not a lot better reason for it except for that they couldn't be asked.
Well, also there's the fact that it's one of these problems where if you don't have anyone on, basically it's a new internet effectively.
No, it isn't.
Isn't it?
Sorry. No, that's not how it works. If you're on the IPv6 internet, you can talk to the existing IPv4 hosts.
Yeah, yeah, but there's no point getting on the IPv6 until there's things on the IPv6 to look at.
It's certainly true. There are no current websites that you couldn't get without an IPv6 address. That is true.
So for wages, there was just no reason for them to go on it.
Yeah, that's true.
That's what I meant, basically. Yeah.
The hardware vendors had no major incentive to do it either way, either, because their customers didn't want it. So nobody has been making progress because nobody else has been making progress.
It's a chicken and egg problem, basically.
But now we've run out of V4 addresses, so we're going to start seeing people who are not on the V4 internet. and the first time somebody tries to set up a website or something and can't get a V4 address, then their customers won't be able to get to them. So you are going to need to start actually migrating. But the problem is the telecoms guys haven't been asked. They haven't upgraded their kit, and so it's going to take a while until they manage to replace it all with kit which does in fact support the new protocol.
Luckily, it's not like completely gone. What's basically happened is last addresses have been allocated to some people to give out.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a bit cheating to say it's the end of the internet.
It's not actually the end of the internet. No. The first perceptible end of the internet will come in about 5-6 months' time, when the Asia Pacific allocation organization, which I think is called APNIC, APNIC, runs out of their pool of addresses. At which point, if you're Chinese and looking for an address, you won't be able to get one.
I particularly like how the Guardian have described this as like, "How can I fix this?" And then just, "You can't." It's like, well, yes.
As is the case with most major disasters.
You don't, yeah, I think they should have that on the end of all their news stories. It's like it's some sort of situation. It's like, how can I fix this? You can't.
A big meteorite is going to destroy the Earth in 6 months. How can I help? Duck and cover?
There you go. Moving on. Is that the story? Oh, sorry.
This is the story. Well, this is sort of the story. This is this is my frivolous story for the week, which is that there's a big fire at a recycling plant in Ellesmere Port, which I quite liked, because this does suggest that on the inside of a recycling plant there is in fact just a big fire all the time. You know, like, taking in all the recycling stuff and saying, oh yeah. Yeah, this stuff is going to be recycled. Going to be using it again. Put it in the fire. And then somebody came in and went, my God, you're just burning it all. And then the governor of the plant has had to go, oh my God, it's on fire. That's not supposed to be the case. There was supposed to be a recycling facility here. But now it's caught fire in a way that looks quite a lot like an incinerator.
Somebody
put it out.
This is a glass recycling plant, so heating things up is not an insane idea.
Really? Oh.
yes. There you go.
Well, there goes my frivolous story. My frivolity is punctured.
With a piece of glass. Before it got melted.
Before it was melted.
And just quickly rounding up the last ones that we've got here. We've got a street in Preston has been branded the most crime-ridden in England and Wales by a government website.
Yeah, this is that new police.uk site where you can see a sort of a heat map of crime in the UK. But they've taken the controversial step of taking large-ish areas and then mapping everything that occurs in that area onto one particular street. Which is like, so with the result that, you know, that you end up seeing that street as ridden with crime, whilst the ones around it have none, in order to anonymise who is actually the victims of crime, which is fair enough.
It's actually happened in Cambridge as well. Apparently there's a street,
Pease Hill was said to be the most criminal place in all of Cambridge, when in fact all the crime was happening in the Market Square, as you might expect, and Pease Hill had absolutely nothing, but they planted them there in order to anonymise things. I mean, it could be worse. I mean, they could be saying it was like at Steve's house. You know, it's like Steve's house was the subject of all crime in the inner Cambridge area.
Apparently, quite funnily, in some cases the most crime ridden street was the one with the police station on, because any crime that didn't have an address, they just someone had just phoned up and said, oh, just yeah, this is happening, they allocated to the police station. So it looked like they were the worst at doing their jobs in
their or the criminals were taunting them. So, you know, standing outside the police station, you know, like causing criminal damage to property and going, ah, what you gonna do about it, eh? Those pesky kids.
moving on to unpesky kids. London school children are recording a rousing song to celebrate Teesside's steelmaking heritage, because yes, because there is a blast furnace which is in fact has in fact been saved. And is now being run by a Thai company rather than one that used to be UK Steel.
Hmm. It's sort of the film Brastoff, but for steel instead of coal.
But I find it amusing that this is one of the headlines. We're just talking about a heavy metal song, which I think will be much more appropriate, but I'm sure it won't be. I'd love that. Just a bunch of school children just getting together going, steel! Smashing their guitars.
I was
going
to say, if you're doing songs for steel, surely, like, what we've established from recent cultural history is that stripping is a necessity. But then it occurred to me, this is a group of steel children. That's illegal. One should never, never, never produce such a show. So let's not.
But there you go. It just sounds quite funny. Perhaps we'll get other parts of the country just making songs. We have a bunch of London school children just making a song about the banking system.
I remember when there were banks around here.
will it get people in Cambridge just singing about water in general? Fenland. I don't know.
the water industry that used to exist in Cambridge.
Well, the eel catching industry that used to exist around Ely that doesn't anymore.
Yeah, yes, that is actually... Yeah, the word Ely does in fact just mean like eels.
Full of eels.
Yep. Eel-esque. Eelsome.
And to finish off, a Belgian runner has set a new world record by completing 365 marathon races in a year, and he averaged about 4 hours, which I think is pretty amazing.
That is good work.
apparently the record previously was a Japanese man who ran 52 in a row, and but which sounds a lot less impressive, but then that guy was 65.
I'm impressed he lives to do that.
Also, like, he's obviously someone who's just got the money to afford to go and run marathons, or did some of the sponsorship get siphoned off? I don't know.
You'd hope, yeah. You gotta need some sponsorship to run a marathon a day for a year.
But yeah. But anyway, that's a nice uplifting note to end the show on. Thank you very much. I hope you enjoyed it. I've been Michael Quintero,
and I've been Chris Moten.
And that leaving first of all, tune in again next week. Coming up next on CAM FM, it's a classical carousel.